You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. The San Joaquin Valley is filled with remarkable stories about families, fortunes, and fame. But for every one of those stories that you've already heard, there's another one that you probably haven't, one that has escaped the attention of the media and even local lore. Our next guest is here to tell one of those stories, one which stretches from the farms of Selma to the Klondike Gold Rush to the oil fields of Kern County. Her name is Betsy Lumbey, former executive editor of the Fresno Bee and author of the new book Beyond Luck, The Improbable Rise of the Berry Fortune Across a Western Century. Betsy Lumbey, welcome.
Thank you.
The book just came out on West of the West Books. I want to ask you, before we get into the topic of this book and start talking about Clarence Berry and his remarkable journey through life and his family, how exactly did this project come about? Because this is something new for you and something a little bit unusual in itself.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't written a book before. I was in journalism in newspapers for about 32 years, and I had left the Bee and was sort of semi-retired, I guess, and I got a call one day from Mark Arax, and he had started a nonprofit that he wants to use as a vehicle for telling Valley stories, untold stories. And he was compiling a lot of oral histories, tape recordings he had done, and things like that. And he was introduced to a man named Peter Bennett. And Peter was interested in telling his family story. And so Mark knew that I was around, and he contacted me, and I met with Peter, and that's kind of how it all got started.
And Peter Bennett traces his legacy and his family back to one Clarence Berry.
Yes.
And this man was a farmer in Selma, and the story takes off from there. What made Clarence Berry's journey so unique?
Well, it's really a slice of the American West. It's an adventure story, and it's a rags-to-riches story, and it's just – it's really unbelievable. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, but it's real. Clarence was a poor farmer in Selma, and his family, they were pioneers there. They had dug some of the first irrigation canals there, which is a whole story in itself, and that's part of the book. And things were going okay, and then there was a depression in the 1890s, and he lost everything. And so kind of in desperation, he decided to head toward Alaska. There had been some minor gold rushes there, some discoveries there, and he thought that he would try his luck up there. So he gets to Alaska, and then he decides to head to the Yukon, which is really deep in country then. I mean, it's 600 miles overland from Anchorage, and just, you know, an ordeal even getting there. So he gets there and prospects, and it takes a couple years, but he strikes it rich. And he was the guy who actually set off the Klondike Gold Rush, which was a huge phenomenon in Canadian, actually in world history. But he was with a group of guys who made the big strike there and came back and became world famous after that.
How did he go from a farmer, though, to gold rush pioneer? Was that a challenging transition from digging irrigation ditches and canals in Selma to all of a sudden a gold miner?
Well, it sounds crazy, but I think that his skills that he developed in Selma probably helped him a lot. A lot of the people that later went up after they heard about his success failed. A lot of people even died on the way there. I mean, it was actually, you know, there was a lot of tragedy in that gold rush. But because Clarence had to be self-sufficient and grew up in a time where, you know, there's no safety net. You had to, if you needed something, you had to invent it. You know, if you needed something on the farm that didn't exist, you had to figure out how to make it. And so he's very, very resourceful. And even though he had no experience in that kind of climate, you know, 60 below zero and dark all winter and all that kind of thing, he was smart. He invented a device for invented a device for mining in permafrost that later got him a place in the Mining Hall of Fame He's enshrined there as the inventor of this special technique for melting permafrost. And so that was the kind of guy he was. He also was just a really nice guy. I mean, he was kind of a man's man, and everybody liked him. And so whenever he showed up, he made friends, and he was generous to a fault. He tended to give away whatever he had or bring people into whatever venture he had going. And so whenever there was a time when things could have gone a different way, people sort of stood up and did him a good turn. So there are a couple of times where it was almost miraculous how something could have gone another way, and a good deed that he had done came back. And it was just really good karma. So that's kind of why I call the book Beyond Luck, is that he not only was insanely lucky, but it was luck mixed with really hard work, the hardest work you could imagine, and timing and instincts and just people skills. And there's another piece of this, right? He didn't just strike gold. He then struck oil in Kern County.
I was just going to say that alone would be a rags-to-riches story worthy of plenty of ink on the page. But then it continues back to California. So he leaves the Klondike Gold Rush and comes back home, essentially, and does it again. How does that happen?
Well, at this time, he still has mining operations in the Klondike and in Alaska. He keeps expanding his mining presence there. But, you know, he has some money now. And so his dad actually got him into this. His dad was one of the founding fathers of Selma, William Jackson Berry. And people in Selma were starting to really get interested in oil exploration. Everybody knew there was oil in Kern County because, I mean, it was bubbling out of the ground. But there hadn't been the market for it that there was just about to be. And it was just the right time in history that it was about to be something really big. So around 1899, his dad convinces him to buy a piece of property. And one thing leads to another. And before too long, he's got a lot of oil holdings, and oil is booming all of a sudden. And that's the real empire that made the family very wealthy. They had their gold wealth, but the oil wealth was what really grew and endured until today.
And the story goes all the way up into the present day when their company that eventually became Berry Petroleum sold for how much just a little while ago last year?
It was just short of $5 billion. And this all comes from an empire that Clarence Berry started with $3.60. That's how much he had when he first arrived in a little lean-to shanty kind of bar in the Yukon and spent that money buying everybody a round of drinks, which turned out to be a great investment because they were his friends after that, and everybody helped him out.
Lessons to future entrepreneurs.
Yes.
There. Be generous when at the bar with enterprising fellows.
He was a gambler. I mean, that was a big gamble, but they were pretty well known for gambling a lot, the Berries were. And they would gamble on, you know, how long it would take a fly to get to the top of the ceiling. This is, you know, the long days and the long nights in the Klondike, and how much a dog weighed, or just, you know, anything they could think of to gamble, they gambled on. And so his life was a succession of big gambles.
If you just joined us on Valley Edition today, our guest is Betsy Lumbee. She's the author of a new book called Beyond Luck, The Improbable Rise of the Berry Fortune Across a Western Century. It tells the story of a family that started out in Selma, went on to the Klondike Gold Rush, instrumental in that, and then struck it big again in the oil fields of Kern County. It's a legacy that continues today. So where does Mr. Bennett fit into this picture?
Peter is a pretty big philanthropist here in Fresno, but he does it also quietly that very few people that I know even know who he is. I mean, people would ask me what I was working on, and I'd say the name, and not many people know, but he's actually done, you know, quite a bit philanthropically in the community. But how he started out was, even though he came from this very prominent, wealthy family, he grew up to be the sort of unassuming person he is. And the way that happened was, he was born in Beverly Hills, and his parents were really socialites there. His mother's name was Melba Berry Bennett, and his dad was actually a World War I war hero, like Hemingway, he got impatient for the war to start, and he went and drove an ambulance for the French army and ended up being awarded the Croix de Guerre. His name was Frank Bennett. So he comes back and he marries Melba. And at some point they decide early in Peter's life that they want to take him and his sister to Palm Springs and raise them. At that time, Palm Springs is just a little Indian village. It's very small. There's nothing much going on there. They decided to buy this old resort, and they ended up making it a real hangout for very wealthy East Coast families and Hollywood movie stars. But everything was always very low-key. Everybody wore jeans and plaid shirts, and they served themselves at the table. So here's young Peter growing up surrounded by guys like Jack Benny and Don Ameche and you know, all kinds of big names. Howard Hughes was there one time. His dad kicked him out, which is a story in the book. but that was the childhood that he knew. And even though he was surrounded by celebrity, he never realized what his family's legacy was, or, you know, what kind of wealth there was. He's the oldest living heir to the Berrys. Clarence and his wife never had children. And even though he was only 7 when Clarence died, Clarence made a special place for him in his will. Eventually, he came to be chairman of Berry Petroleum. And he was chairman during the years when it really expanded, during the oil embargo and the boom years of the 1970s. Later, he left the company and went back to his first love, which was cattle ranching. And that's what he really did ever since then. But he's an interesting guy. What he really wanted to do when he started out was to be a photojournalist. And he actually studied with Ansel Adams at one time. That's the kind of story this is. I mean, it intersects with so many points in history.
I want to turn now to the process of putting this book together. As a journalist, as a historian, as a biographer, you're taught to keep some distance between yourself and your subject. What was Mr. Bennett's role in this? Did he have to sign off on this? Is this an authorized biography? How did you approach writing this book? Because this is a different sort of venture than maybe traditional publishing would be, with the nonprofit and philanthropic avenues involved there and the Bennett family involved.
That's right. And luckily, Peter made it really easy. I mean, he did have a background in journalism. That's what he studied at Stanford many years ago. And he just always told me, let the chips fall where they may. And everything wasn't flattering, you know, everything wasn't flattering to him. But the only thing that he ever asked me to change in the whole book was there's a part in the beginning where he and I are on a road trip and we're looking at the oil fields in Kern County. And, you know, his language can be a little salty. And he asked me if I wouldn't mind just taking out a couple of the curse words. And that's seriously the only editing call that he ever made. He loved everything, and it made it really easy.
The book is called Beyond Luck, The Improbable Rise of the Berry Fortune Across a Western Century, taking us from the fields of Selma to the Klondike Gold Rush in the late 1800s to the oil field boom in Kern County in the next century and all the way up into the present day. It is a new book on West of the West Books, a new imprint by Mark Arax, a nonprofit organization that he has started to tell the stories of individuals here in the San Joaquin Valley. Where can people get the book?
It will be on Amazon.com shortly. And I believe it'll be at Barnes & Noble pretty soon, too.
Betsy Lumbee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.